You Forever by Tuesday Love Sang Rampa. Read to you by Blue Friend. September 2016. Lesson 16. So we meet again in our attic. We have cleaned up the place a bit and discovered a few fresh items. Some of them will perhaps shine a little ray of light onto a doubt which you've had for some time. Look at this for a start. Here's a letter which we received some time ago. It says, "You write about fear. You say there is nothing to be afraid of except fear. In your answer to my question, you told me that it was fear that was keeping me back, preventing me from progressing. I am not conscious of fear. I do not feel afraid. So what can the matter be?" Yes, that is quite an interesting problem. Fear. Fear is the only thing that can hold a person back. Shall we have a look at it? Sit down for a moment and let's discuss this problem of fear. All of us have certain fears. Some people are afraid of the dark. Others are afraid of spiders or snakes. And some of us may be aware of our fears. That is, we have fears which are in our consciousness. But wait a moment. Our consciousness is only a tenth of us. 9/10 of us are subconscious. So what happens if the fear is in our subconscious? Often we will do things under hidden compulsion, or we will refrain from doing something because of a hidden compulsion. We do not know why we do a certain thing. We do not know why we cannot do a certain thing. There is nothing on the surface. There is nothing that we can pin down. We act irrationally, and if we went to a psychologist and we lay on that couch for long, long hours, at last it may be dragged out of our subconscious that we had a fear because of something that happened when we were small babies. The fear would be hidden from our awareness, working at us, nagging at us from our subconscious. It would be like termites attacking a wooden frame building. The building, to all cursory inspections, would appear to be sound, flawless, and then, almost overnight, it would collapse under the influence of those termites. The same thing happens in the matter of fear. Fear does not have to be conscious to be active. It is most active when it is subconscious, because then we do not know that it is there, and, not knowing that it is there, there is nothing we can do about it. Throughout the lifetime of all of us, we have been subjected to certain conditioning influences. A person who has been brought up as a Christian will have been taught that certain things are not done. Certain things are distinctly forbidden. Yet, people of a different religion, brought up differently, are permitted to do such things. So, in looking into the question of fear, we have to examine what has been our racial and family background. Are you afraid of seeing a ghost? Why? If Aunt Matilda was kind-hearted and generous and loved you dearly during her lifetime, there is no reason whatever to suppose that she's going to love you less when she has left this life and gone on to a far better stage of existence. So why fear the ghost of Aunt Matilda? We fear the ghost because it is something alien to many of us. We fear a ghost because it may have been taught in our religion that there are no such things, that one cannot see a ghost unless one is a saint or an associate of saints or something. We fear that which we do not understand, and it is worth thought that if there were no passports, no language difficulties, there would be less wars because we are afraid of the Russians or the Turks or the Afghanis or something else, because we do not understand them. We do not know what makes them tick, or what they are going to do against us. Fear is a terrible thing. It is a disease. It is a scourge. It is a thing that corrodes our intellect. If we have certain reservations about a thing, then we must dig down and find out why. For instance, why do certain religions teach there's no such thing as reincarnation? One obvious example is this. In the days of long ago, the priests had utter power, and they ruled people by terror, by the thought of eternal damnation. Everyone was taught that they had to make the best of this life because there would be no other opportunity. It was known that if people were taught of reincarnation, they might tend to slack in this life and pay for it in the next. In connection with this, it used to be perfectly permissible in the China of long ago to contract a debt in this life to be paid in the next. It is also worth remarking that China became decadent because the people believed so much in reincarnation that they didn't bother much in this life. Instead, they just sat around, taking their canaries out in cages under the trees at night, and deciding that they would make up for it in the next life. This one would be more or less a vacation. Well, it didn't work that way, and so the whole Chinese culture became decadent. Once again, examine yourself, your intellect, your imagination. Give yourself deep analysis and find out what it is that your subconscious is trying to bottle up. What it is that is making you so afraid, so worried, so jittery about things. When you dig that out, you will find that there are no more fears. It is fear which stops people from doing astral traveling. Actually, as we well know, astral traveling is remarkably simple. There is no effort to it. It is as simple as breathing, and yet, most people fear it. Sleep is almost death. Sleep is a reminder of death, a reminder that eventually we shall go off into a deep sleep, and we wonder what will happen to us when death, instead of sleep, claims us. We wonder if, during our sleep, someone will sever our silver cord and we will be off. That cannot happen. There is no danger in astral traveling. There is only danger in fear. In fear that you know, and more danger in fear that you do not know. We suggest again and again, get down to this problem of fear. That which you know and understand is not fearsome. So get to know and understand what it is that you now fear. We devoted a lot of time to that little incident, did we not? We must move on, for there is much yet to engage our attention, much yet to be dealt with before we can draw the curtains on this lesson and move on to the next. Look about you. Look about in our attic. Does anything in particular attract your attention? Do you see that ornament over there? Out of this world, isn't it? Oh, we may have started something with that saying. Out of this world. There are many sayings in common use which are truly descriptive of things. A man might say that he has seen something so beautiful that it was right out of this world. How true that is. When we get beyond the confines of this carbon molecule existence, with all its pains and trials and tribulations, we can hear sounds and see colors and have experiences which are, quite literally, out of this world. Here are we, confined in the cave of our own ignorance. We are confined by the bonds of our own lusts, our own wrong thoughts. So many of us are so busy trying to keep up with the Joneses that we have no time to look about us. We have the mundane whirl of existence. We have to earn our living, and then there are social obligations. After that, we have a certain amount of sleep, so it seems that all our life is planned in one whirl, one mad rush. There is never time for anything. But wait a minute. Is there any need for all this rush? Can we not arrange somehow to have even as little as half an hour each day and devote it to meditation? If we will meditate, we can get right out of this world. We can, with a little practice, get into the astral and into the next world. The experience is exhilarating, elevating. When we elevate our spiritual thinking, we increase our rate of vibration, and the higher we can perceive on our piano scale, do you remember that scale? The more beautiful the experiences which we may undergo. Out of this world should be our objective, of course. We want to get out of this world when we have learned our lessons, but not before. Look again at our classroom experiences. Many of us may have been heartily sick of staying in a stuffy classroom on a warm summer's day, listening to the droning voice of a teacher churning out stuff which really had no interest for us. Who wanted to know about the rise and fall of a certain empire? We felt we should be much better off out in the open. We desired, above all, to get away from that classroom, that hot and stuffy room with the dull voice droning on. But we could not do so. If we had just run out, there sure would have been retribution from the teachers. If we had skipped our lessons, we should have failed our exams, and instead of passing on to another grade, we should have been kept back in the same monotonous classroom with another lot of students that would have looked upon us as curiosities and dunces because we had failed to make the grade. Let us not, then, get out of this world permanently until we have learned that which we came to learn. We can look forward confidently to joys, to ease, and to spiritual perfection when we leave this world for that which is much more glorious. We should always keep in mind that we are here as one serving a prison sentence under particularly doleful conditions. We cannot see how dreadful this earth is while we are here, but if you could move out now and look down, you would have quite a shock. You would be most unwilling to return. That is why so many of us cannot do astral traveling, because, unless one is prepared, it is indeed an unpleasant experience to return. All the joy is the other side. Those of us who do astral traveling look forward to the days of our release, but we also make sure that while we are in our prison cell, we behave as best we can, for if we do not behave, we lose our remission time. So, let us do the best we can upon earth so that when we come to pass from this life, we are prepared and ready for the greater things of the life beyond. It is worth the small effort involved in living here. We seem to be very busy in our attic, shifting items, knocking the dust off some which have been sorted for a long time, but let us move on to the other side of the room. Let us look at another little item. Many people think that seers are always looking at one's aura, always reading one's thoughts. How wrong they are. A person with telepathic ability, or the power of clairvoyance, is not always reading thoughts or examining the aura of friends or enemies. Some of the things we should see would be far too unpleasant, far too unflattering. Some of them would indeed burst the balloon of our imagined importance. There is too much else to do. We have in mind a certain person who sometimes visits us. She will start off a sentence and utter three or four words and then trail off with, "But I don't have to tell you anything, do I? You know everything just by looking at me, don't you?" That is not so. We could know everything, but it would be morally wrong to do so. Have no fear about seers, occultists, clairvoyants, and others, for if they are of good morals, they will not be peering at your private affairs, even with your invitation. If they are not of good morals, they cannot do it anyway. We want to tell you here that the backstreet seer who tells your fortune for a trifle has no real seeing ability. She's usually a poor old woman who cannot make money in any other way. Probably, at some time, she had clairvoyant ability, but you cannot do such things on a commercial basis. You cannot tell a person clairvoyantly things about themselves for money, because the mere fact of passing of money causes the telepathic ability to wane, and the backstreet seer cannot always see. Yet, if she has taken money, then she must put on some sort of a show. Being quite a good, untrained psychologist, she will let you do the talking, and will then tell you the things that you told her. And you, being deluded by the term seer, will exclaim with wonder at how accurately she has told you what you want to know. Have no fear that clairvoyants are looking at your affairs. Would you be happy if you thought that you were busy in your own home, writing a letter maybe, and someone came into your room, peered over your shoulder and read what you were writing? Would you like that person to go through your possessions, picking up this and that, and reading that, and getting to know all about you, getting to know all that you had, all that you thought about? Would you like to think that a person was tuning in all the time to any telephone conversation that you had? Of course you wouldn't. Let us say once again that a person of good character does not read your thoughts all the time, and a person of bad character quite definitely doesn't have the ability. That is a law of the occult. A person of bad character is not clairvoyant. You might hear a lot of tales about a person who sees this and that and something else. Discount 999% of it. A clairvoyant will always wait for you to tell him or her what you want to discuss. The clairvoyant will not intrude into the privacy of your thoughts or your aura, not even if you invite that clairvoyant to do so. There are certain laws of occultism which must be adhered to most rigidly, for if one breaks those laws, one can be punished in much the same way as one can be punished if one breaks a man-made law on earth. Tell the clairvoyant what you want to tell. He or she will know if you are telling the truth. We will go so far as to admit that. Tell the clairvoyant whatever you want to, but make sure that if you do, you tell the truth. Otherwise, you are deluding yourself only, and not in any way deluding the clairvoyant. So, remember once again, a good psychic or seer will not read your thoughts, and a bad one cannot. Now, here is another little item which we'll take a look at. It is this. So, you don't get on with your marriage partner? Well, that may be the obstacle which you have to overcome on earth. Let us put it this way. Horses are entered in races, and if one horse wins consistently, and apparently has no great effort in so doing, that horse is handicapped. You can look upon yourself as a horse. You may have gone too quickly, too easily through your last lessons. In that case, you may be handicapped with a partner who is not suitable for you. Make the best of it while you can, remembering that if your partner is really incompatible with you, then you will never, never come into contact with him or her in the life beyond this earth. If a man picks up a screwdriver or a hammer that is just a tool which suits the need of a job at hand, the partner can be looked upon as a tool which enables one to do a certain job, to learn a certain lesson. A man may become attached to a screwdriver or a hammer, may become attached to it because it enables him to do a job that he has to do. But you may be sure that a man will not be so attached to his hammer or screwdriver that he will want to take it with him to the other side. There is so much said and written about the glory of humanity, but we are going to say that humans are not the greatest form of life. Humans on earth, for example, are truly a scruffy lot, sadistic, selfish, and self-seeking. If they were not, they would not be upon this earth, because people come to this earth in order that they may learn how to overcome just those things. Humans are greater indeed when they get beyond life. But let us again make sure that we understand that if we have an unsuitable marriage partner here, or unsuitable parents, it may be because we planned that as something which we would have to overcome. A person may have a vaccination or inoculation. They may, for instance, deliberately take a dose of smallpox by way of inoculation in order that they may be protected from a more severe and perhaps fatal dose later on. So it is that our marriage partner or our parents may have been chosen in order that we could learn certain lessons from associating with them. But we do not have to meet them again after we have finished this life. In fact, we cannot meet them if they are incompatible with us, for we must repeat, when we are on the other side of death, we are living in harmony, and if people are not in harmony with us, they cannot associate with us. Many of us can indeed take comfort from that. But the shadows of night are closing in. The day is coming to an end. We feel that we should not detain you any longer, for you will have much to do before the night falls. Let us leave the attic and close the door gently behind us. Close the door upon all the treasures contained therein, and let us descend those aged, creaking stairs again, and go our separate ways in peace. End of lesson 16.